The Gross Profit Podcast is your one-stop shop on the path to profitability. Each week, we share authentic advice on the positive, practical steps you can take to make the company you love more profitable. If you're looking for a positive plan to help you avoid common spending mistakes, control costs, and increase your profits, then this is the place for you. I'm Ryan Cowden, and this week we're joined by James Kennedy and Mike McGrath. In this episode of the Gross Profit Podcast, James and Mike discuss five key ways you can prepare for Brexit. The latest in a series of Brexit deadlines is January 31st. With no plan for departure left in place, a lot of companies are taking matters into their own hands, reaching out to their contacts and making plans for what might come next. Since no deal has yet been announced, it's hard to know how to prepare. While we can't predict the future, we can offer five strategies you can put in place that will set you up for success, no matter what agreements the politicians may or may not make. On this episode, you'll hear our five key strategies to prepare for Brexit. These include developing long-term supplier relationships, having specific supplier agreements in place, group buying, stockpiling, and having alternate suppliers. Next, we'll discuss how key relationships can sustain you through any outcome. Having good relationships with key suppliers is something all good businesses practice, but with the uncertainty of Brexit looming, these relationships will be more important than ever. Make sure your key suppliers know how important they are to you, and commit to making your ends meet through the uncertainties of the Brexit process. Then we'll talk about why you need an EORI number. Your Economic Operator's Registration Identification Number is a free number, easily obtained, that allows you to do business with companies in the EU. In the event of a no-deal Brexit, you will definitely need an EORI number. It's free and easily obtained, so you should get this as soon as possible. Finally, we'll cover the importance of NACE codes. NACE codes are labels that classify physical goods as they are being shipped and will be essential for you if you plan on sending or receiving goods in the future. If you find yourself wondering how Brexit will impact your company, then this is one episode you won't want to miss. There's a lot of actionable advice in this episode, so grab something to write with because you're going to want to take notes. As always, I'll be back on the other side to wrap up any loose ends. So without any further ado, here's our conversation with James and Mike.
Hello, and welcome back to the Gross Profit Podcast. It's James Kennedy here, CEO at ProcurementExpress.com. We help hundreds of companies safely spend billions of dollars each year. And I am delighted to be joined today by Mike McGrath. Sorry, Mike. From Arvo. And Arno, maybe you can just introduce yourself a little bit, Mike.
Sure, James. Thanks. As you mentioned, Arvo is the business here. We have a procurement company in Ireland. We help clients reduce costs and risks. And like this conversation around Brexit, a lot of the risks in supply chain have been around changes to future trading arrangements with the UK and Northern Ireland, and obviously for Northern Irish businesses dealing with European suppliers, particularly in the Republic.
Yeah, we're talking today actually because you brought out a very, invested a lot actually in creating this resource for companies, Brexit, five actions to take now. A practical purchasing guide for businesses on the island of Ireland. But I guess a lot of this would be transferable to other countries as well, mainland Europe. I suppose US, it's going to be same business as usual, or some of the same issues could come up from US people sourcing in the UK because now they don't have the old customs procedures. It's going to be a new set of procedures, or we don't know, right?
Correct. Yeah, correct. And this book has been addressed to an Irish audience, but the same principles in this book would apply to other countries in Europe, France, Holland, and Belgium that might be trading daily with the UK and business in that areas. The US, you mentioned, wouldn't be directly impacted in the short term, but as trade agreements change and evolve, some of these issues may arise as well. So it's worth bearing, I suppose, the principles here are both reducing supplier risk, and be that for Brexit or any other eventuality that may occur in the supply chain.
Yeah, well, there's actually a lot of great resources in the book. We won't have time to go through all of it, but they're at a high level. I think it's safe to say that at least a good portion of these could be applicable to any business, whether there's Brexit happening or not. And it's just best practice, which is good to have. So you've picked out five things in particular, key actions that people should be, or companies should be planning for. So what are those and how would you get started with it?
We've narrowed it down, I suppose, and not all actions are relevant to all businesses, and it depends on the risk within that's going to affect the business around Brexit as well. But the five actions that we have, and I can list them and go into a bit more detail. The first one is to develop long-term supplier relationships. So your key suppliers, your strategic suppliers, which might maybe identified through what's called a crowdcheck analysis, it's worth developing a longer term relationship with them, developing a partnership approach, that whatever Brexit or whatever shape Brexit is, whatever occurs, that you are getting that partnership approach with them and you're working through the risks and issues that arise. The second thing is looking at having an agreement or a supply agreement in place with your key suppliers so that there's guarantees, there's SLAs, and that there's a better formality in terms of relationship as opposed to just ordering products and serving and hoping that they arrive. It's formalizing that and having some Brexit clauses in there with regards to what might happen if currency goes up or down by 5 or 10%, what happens with the imposition of duties and taxes, does only have any effect around CE marking or REACH registration, how's that going to impact the relationship? That's the first two. The third one that we would recommend is to consider group buying. So some risks in the supply chain, maybe with a particular location, as an example, in the UK and Northern Ireland now, European businesses may have a particular bottleneck emerging there. SMEs in particular may not have the capacity to storage the resources, or they may not be meeting minimum order quantities to bypass that risk. But if they work together, if they group bought, if they leverage their economies of scale, in that scenario, they might be able to bypass the risk. And it works. It has been proactive. It has been a useful tool for the last number of years in terms of cost reduction, but in this way, it's a good way to bypass particular risks. The second last example that we would come across out of the action is to consider stockpiling. Now, that has been a costly exercise for many businesses, particularly on up to the first deadline around Brexit in March 2019, when a lot of businesses were stockpiling, warehouses bulging with products and services, products and spare parts and components. And unfortunately, there was cash tied up there, and some of those products are still sitting on those shelves as they haven't been used. So stockpiling works when it's a key component that you're going to use anyway. Stockpiling works what we call bottleneck item.
Very good.
It's not a silver bullet.
Yeah, and then finally, you have listed here alternate suppliers. What does that mean? Alternate suppliers on your own in the island of Ireland, for example?
It depends on your current supplier's risks and their location. And if they're not engaging with you on the Brexit conversation, if they don't have a Brexit plan, if they're not ready for the administration and paperwork that's coming down the track, it might be worthwhile. And we have clients that are proactively looking for alternative suppliers. It's good practice anyway. You shouldn't have a single source of supply for anything, and where possible. So finding alternatives wherever they may be on the planet is a good practice, but it does take time. It takes time to identify them, vet them, negotiate, understand their business, get credit terms, understand the culture, and obviously the product service fit them as well, see how it fit into your supply chain. So that is an active Brexit strategy or an action that companies are taking, but it's a slow process. It can, we've seen some cases where it takes 6 to 9 months to find an alternative single supplier. So don't be thinking you're going to do that on the 1st of February 2020 if the UK crashes out without a deal and you need to find an alternative supplier. It needs to be started now if that's something that's a risk to your business.
So, I mean, developing relationship with key suppliers, and you go through to some of the books and guides on how to actually identify those. But once you have identified the, you know, suppliers that you want to build a better relationship, what's a practical way to do that? Do you send them something for Christmas, a bottle of something, typically in Ireland, or what are the practical ways that you can actually build that relationship with them?
You are absolutely correct. It's your key suppliers that you've identified that are vital to the business, and you're developing a relationship and a partnership with them, which is appropriate for your industry and your sector. And that works in different ways. A gift for Christmas is beneficial. But in terms of practical business operations, we would see monthly or quarterly meetings with key suppliers, building up a relationship of what's working for both sides of the coin. So there's always been a negotiation and give and take, and having a proactive quarterly business review with your key suppliers, understanding what's happening in the industry and the sector, understanding what's happening in their business, how engaged they are with risks around Brexit, is worthwhile. That meeting ideally is face-to-face, if not a conference call, and that's worthwhile. And then it's not just about what you're getting from the meeting. You need to be going to the meeting and seeing and understanding what you might be able to do for the other partner as well. So improving credit terms, expediting payments, increasing ordering, whatever it is that would help improve the relationship and the partnership, developing that trust, understanding where the business they're going as an operation, and investing time yourself to make sure that whatever happens with Brexit or any other risk that you both partners are on the same page and can work through it.
So if you're on the upside or maybe working on a procurement team, I guess you have to put a case to that to leadership about, you know, the value of maybe going to meet some of your suppliers and investing that time in it and explaining how it's going to be worth it in terms of mitigating, you know, risks when problems do arise. And I guess that's not exclusive to Brexit, right? It's any supplier that is key to your business. In order to maintain that supply, you should invest up front so that when something goes sideways, maybe you're the first team to get looked after as opposed to everyone else.
Absolutely. That's it. Exactly. So if the supplier is proactive and engaged and honest and you have a good relationship with them, I'm sure they'll let you know as soon as there's an issue with that product or service coming down the track. So if you don't have that relationship with them, if you're not a tier one customer to them, you may be second best. So understanding what's happening with their business and how they're going to help you is worthwhile, and vice versa. You need to be considerate of what's impacting them as well and see how you can possibly change the operation slightly to be more minimal to that relationship.
Have you any examples of clients you've worked with where they've done that and it's paid off?
Yeah, no, we have. We've, particularly around Brexit at the moment, we've seen a number of UK and Northern Irish businesses setting up operations in the south, and some of those operations have been set up in partnership with key customers. So customers have helped them to identify locations, warehousing, help them with some of the paperwork administration. So the customer is benefiting because now their suppliers in the same jurisdiction, and it has been worthwhile. So depending on the risk, depending on the supplier, it makes sense to help them where you can, and the long-term benefit is to benefit everyone, so to benefit both parties.
Very good. So I guess there's some practical changes that are going to take place now when ordering and so on. There's going to be a lot of people who import from anywhere will be familiar with these, but there's new codings that are going to be even more important, for example, EO or I. Maybe you can just walk through what that is, and maybe we'll talk about the NACE codes as well. People also need to be aware of.
Yeah, the EO I is a good example. It's a number which most people aren't aware of in terms of in the last 20 years. If you're buying from the UK, you didn't need an ERI number. It's not difficult to get, but 60% of Irish importers, yes, don't have one, according to revenue up until last month. So 60% of businesses that bought from the UK last year have not got their ERI number. It's easy to get it, and I'll explain what it is afterwards, but in terms of getting it, you just log into Ross Online Revenue Online Service, and you tick your tax registrations and you tick a box saying customs and import. So that gets you an EOI number. It is your VAT number or your revenue number, but you just need to apply for it. The UK have been more proactive. They just sent out an EOI number to all importers and exporters. So that was a proactive approach, which I think Irish Revenue should consider. The reason you need an EOI number, it's a unique registration. It's required on your import and export documents. It's the first form that you need to fill out, the first page in the form you need to fill out. They're asking for your EOI number. If the UK and Northern Ireland leave the EU and you need to purchase a product or service from there, you need to fill out this paperwork and they're going to ask you for your EOI number. If you don't have it, or if you put through customs paperwork without it, the shipment will stop, so you won't be able to get that product. So that EOI number is important. It stands for Economic Operators Registration Identification. But like I said, it's easy to get. It's a revenue number. It's available from revenue or HMRC, and it needs to be got as soon as possible, and it should take 10 minutes to do it.
So do you need to submit that number when you're placing an order with a vendor or on a purchase order? How is it used?
Every single time you'll be importing or exporting from a third country, so from a country that's outside the EU, companies that are buying at the moment from China and the States and Brazil will know what their EOI number is because they've been using it. Typically, if your freight forwarder might have it on your behalf if you're dealing with a freight forwarder. But in future, if there isn't an agreement or a deal done with the UK and Northern Ireland, you will need that EOI number, and it doesn't cost anything to do it. So it's worth the 10-minute administration to get it. Because again, you want the shipments will stop. The paperwork, the customs paperwork will not. be approved, going through the port, and the product will not arrive into the country.
And I guess it's worth covering off, this is just for physical products. So if I'm buying something from, I don't know, software, for example, is that going to apply?
No, you're correct. It's for the movement of physical goods, pallets, parcels, containers, whatever the form that is. You will need that UI number.
And in addition to that, there's an NACE code, which is also going to be required, or is that optional?
No, yeah, NACE code is a number as well that's for defining a activity or a product. So if it's wood or textiles or plastics or some components, there's a NACE code, which is required. Absolutely, like you said, it's a classification code for products. It's used for reporting, really, but if you're buying in packaging or boxes, you need to describe what the material is made of, and you'll need the NACE codes for cardboard and inks and toner, whatever else is on within the packaging. So those NACE codes are NACE as in NACE, are available as well online. CSO would use them for reporting, and it's worth knowing what they are in terms of completing the paperwork accurately. Unfortunately, the import documentation that you're talking about for Brexit is a lengthy piece of paperwork. It's 55 forms or fields that need to be filled out in the form. So it is in the one in the NACE code and similar, like all practical information about your contact details and the UI number are all there as well, and who the supplier is and what the value is, etc. But the NACE code will need to be known.
Great. So we went from the strategy right down into the nitty gritty of getting filling out the paperwork. I love it. I'm more a tactics guy, mostly myself. So that's interesting. I found that interesting. So thanks very much, Mike. Where can people find more, get a copy, buy the book, or get a copy of it and get in touch with you?
Sure. Yeah. Our website is the central contact point, arvo.ie, www.arvo.ie. The ebook is available on the homepage to download. It's a free ebook, so there's no cost. And hopefully it's an introduction to our world around strategic sourcing and procurement and what we're doing around Brexit. And like I said, and you mentioned it as well, a lot of this practice is good. It's good supplier management anyway. It's not just for Brexit, but it's worth building that resilience into the business, into the supply chain. And all that information is on the website. I think there's a useful chapter towards the end of the book on helpful tools and supports. So we've listed all financial supports, tools and tips. There's templates available online for a lot of the Brexit actions. So we started categorizing those, and there's a section in the book which summarizes all those and links to them as well. So people might find that useful. And like I said, it's on the website, arvo.ie.
Super. Thanks very much. And all the best. Thanks very much for that. That was very useful.
Welcome, James. Glad to contribute.
All right, folks, there you have it. That wraps up our conversation with James and Mike. They shared 5 key practices to guide your business through the rest of the Brexit process. We also shared some tools and resources, which will all be linked up in the show notes. Don't forget to click on one of those links to get a free chapter from the book Profit Leaks by James Kennedy and Garrett Carher. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please consider subscribing, sharing with a friend, or leaving us a review in your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, best of luck in all that you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Gross Profit Podcast.